This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending Friday, the 5th of March, 2021. Hello. And welcome to this week's edition of the Hampshire Chronicle from the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper. I'm your presenter, Barbara Kearns, and today I'm accompanied in the studio by your reader, Daphne Poupart.
Hello.
Sheila Shepherd and Sonia Phillips have edited the extracts this week. And so we'll begin with our usual regular notices. The first is to say that if you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you have received from us, please telephone the contact number which is on the key fob attached to the memory stick. However, before reporting the Sovereign box as faulty, please make sure it is plugged in and fully charged up. As you listen to the recording, please remember that you can use the buttons on your box to move on from an item before it finishes, or back to any of the tracks if you want to listen again. And one more note for those of you with computers or tablets, as well as using your memory stick in the box, you can also access the weekly recordings of the Chronicle through our website, www.winchestertalkingnews.com. Just go to the website, click on News on the header bar, locate the recording you want to hear and click Download. The recordings are listed in date order, the most recent first on the list. And now, let's take a look at this week's edition of the Chronicle. Starting with the news, here are the headlines. Mothers wait for justice. Parties unite to oppose plans for Royal Downtown. And call for reform after malicious tree tip-off. And the first headline story, please.
Mothers wait for justice. The mother of a Winchester man stabbed to death in his own home says she is counting the days to when his killer will face justice. Carl Scott was killed in his Thurmond Crescent home in Stanmore in 2017 by David Gray. Gray hit Mr. Scott on the head with an ornamental axe. However, his case has never had a full court hearing because he was ruled unfit to plead. He received a hospital order for an indeterminate period. At Winchester Crown Court in 2019, the judge ruled that Gray be sectioned under the Mental Health Act. But at a hearing, Gray was confirmed by the court as the killer. The court ruled that should his mental health improve, he will be returned to the criminal justice system and stand trial for murder. Now it is understood that Gray is recovering, and this, according to the victim's mother, Molly Child, means he could be tried. Ms. Child, formerly of Chatham Road, Stanmore, now living in Bournemouth, says she has learned Gray is being allowed out under supervision from his hospital. She told the Chronicle, "This is not over for me and never will be. Gray is getting escorted leave, so he must be getting better, which means he will soon be rehabilitated. If he reaches the stage of rehabilitation, he will be released. But I have been assured he will be arrested and charged with murder. And if he is found guilty, he will not be out for a very long time. If they charge him with manslaughter, he will get approximately 15 years, and with good behaviour, he will get out in 7 years and 6 months. Nothing changes for me and my family, but for society, having Gray on their streets is a scary thought. For those who say, he is well now, let him live on their street. I hate the thought of Gray being free."
Call for reform after malicious tree tip-off. A malicious tip-off sparked an unsuccessful attempt to place a tree protection order on two trees that were never under threat. councillors on the planning committee have unusually rejected the confirmation of the TPO for two western red cedar trees in a back garden on Compton Down. Tree owner Una Stevens of Cliff Way told the committee the garden and the trees were the second most important things in her life after her grandchildren. City Council tree officers placed a temporary order on the trees last November after being tipped off by phone and email that the trees were in danger. When it emerged that they were not under threat, the officers still wanted the TPO because of the trees' value, the planning committee heard. But the committee disagreed and voted by 4-2 not to confirm the order, believing it would be wrong to impose the financial burden of the TPO from the roots of a malicious tip-off. Mrs. Stevens of Cliff Way told the committee that the episode had been deeply upsetting. "It was with total shock that we received the TPO. No planning application has ever been submitted in the 34 years we have lived here, and there will never be one in our lifetimes. We are not tree killers. We are here to preserve our garden. Our garden, apart from our grandchildren, is the most important thing in our lives. It is difficult to feel it is not a personal attack when the reason for the TPO is untrue." Tree officer Ivan Girdler said the tip-off was the trigger to act, but that the trees were subsequently deemed worthy of a TPO. It was unclear if the council knew the identity of the informant. The identity has not been publicly revealed. Committee Chairman Therese Evans said she was sorry Mr. and Mrs. Stevens were upset, but that they should not view a TPO as a personal attack on them. Councillor David McLean said it would be deeply unfair to impose the financial burden of a TPO on Mr. and Mrs. Stevens. The four councillors to oppose the TPO were councillors Russell Gordon-Smith, McLean, Lawrence Ruffell and Roger Bentote. The chairman and vice-chairman, Therese Evans and Angela Clear, supported it. Afterwards, Mrs. Stevens told the Chronicle the TPO process should be reformed. "We regard this episode as an absolute disgrace. Eventually, the action to confirm, not consider, the TPO appeared as an item on the planning committee agenda. The entire process seems to be about confirming the order. The concept of subjecting the assertion to scrutiny seems absent. These features of the process leave it wide open to abuse by malicious parties. We believe we are the victims of such abuse by a neighbour. Despite the happy outcome, the malefactor will be pleased. He has subjected us to 3 months of stress, a heavy workload, and not inconsiderable expense. Once the council allows itself to become involved in a neighbour's grudge against another, it is not only putting its statutory procedures in jeopardy, but is effectively sponsoring a charter for malicious neighbours who can, so easily, throw truth to the four winds." Mrs. Stevens added, "Put quite simply, this whole Surrey saga should never have been allowed to happen. Looking to the future, we shall do all in our power to prevent its reoccurrence."
Parties unite to oppose plans for Royaldown Town. Hundreds of people attended a demonstration against plans for a huge housing development near Winchester, but none of the 280 people left the comfort of their homes on Sunday afternoon, as the event about the Royaldown scheme was held virtually. It had been planned to stage a walk around the area, but that was scuppered by the lockdown. Instead, people heard speeches and viewed photos of the area. A technical problem scuppered the showing of a video taken by drone. Farmer Nick Russell proposes a new town of 5,000 homes on farmland between Hursley and Oliver's Battery, sparking strong opposition from local people and Hampshire CPRE, the countryside charity. Chris Beddoes, chairman of demo organiser Save South Winchester Group, said, "We're here to show our opposition to the Royal Down large-scale development on the green fields south of Winchester." Politicians of both parties, the Conservatives and Lib Dems, were united in opposition to such proposals. City MP Steve Brine said the need for such large schemes had not been shown. And he added, "This is my home. It's the place I chose to live and bring up my children. It matters to me that we have a thriving, successful local economy. And it matters to me that we protect what makes us want to live here in the first place. My kids, like all the young people I interact with in this job, care a lot about the environment and the natural environment. They look to us to protect it and enhance it so they can make a choice to live here when they're grown up." Councillor Jackie Porter, City Council portfolio holder for Built Environment, said, "Royal Down needed to use farmland owned by Hampshire County Council, and without its support, the scheme was undeliverable." She said, "Because anyone can propose land for development, even if it isn't yours. The next stage of the local plan process identifies deliverability, and this is where the developer's pipe dream becomes a problem for him. If the landowner won't give permission for the land to be developed, then the plan for that development is undeliverable. In this case, without Hampshire's express permission, the proposal as it stands won't go any further. It's the safety net of the local plan." Royal Down is on the Sheila, that's S-H-E-L-A-A, list of potential sites compiled by Winchester City Council, although the ruling Liberal Democrat administration says it has no choice in the matter and the site has to be considered. The council is consulting the public over its new local plan that will guide development over the next 20 years, and the Sheila list is essentially a developer's wish list of proposals. The Lib Dem-controlled City Council says it has no power to exclude proposals from that list, and they must be considered as it draws up its new local plan. Felicity Rowe, a senior director at the County Council, said Royal Down was placed on the Sheila list and the developer was wrong to say it had the support of the County Council. She said, "The land was promoted by a third-party speculative property developer without the consent of HCC. That box was ticked by mistake by the developer. We have given no formal consideration to release the land and would not do so unless we are approached by the City Council as part of the need for strategic land supply. We have written to the Royal Down land promoter to say we have not made this land available for housing development. We have no proposal than to do anything but farm that land." The County Council is key to the development as it needs access onto Badger Farm Road across Bushfield Farm, which is council-owned. Ms Rowe has said she hopes the Sheila will be updated as soon as possible. Also speaking was Tessa Robertson, chairman of the Diva Society, fighting plans for a 12,500 home Newtown at Mitchell Dever Station. She said new towns had been shown to suck investment away from existing places. "New towns are the worst option to meet housing needs, and we are calling on the City Council to reject them." Caroline Dibden of Hampshire CPRE, the countryside charity, called for the area around South Winchester to be part of a proposed South Hampshire Green Belt. A poll of people at the demo showed 97% support for such a green belt. Ms Dibden also called for brownfield land to be prioritised. The soon-to-be-vacated Sir John Moore Barracks could provide space for 1,100 homes, she said. Campaigners last week formed an alliance to fight Newtown proposals at Royal Down and Mitchell Dever Station. The new grouping comprises Hampshire CPRE, the Diva Society and the Save South Winchester Group. Meanwhile, a former city councillor is calling for the controversial Royal Down scheme to provide a new council housing estate. Ian Tate, who was a Conservative councillor serving on the City Council Planning Committee for 20 years until 2019, is pressing the City Council to look into using the proposal as a way of meeting the pressing need for affordable housing. Whilst a councillor, he was one of the few to express support for Barton Farm, a development of 2,000 homes, of which 800 will be for people on the City Council housing list. Mr. Tate asked the council meeting last Wednesday evening, "In the light of the chronic underprovision of affordable and inclusive housing in the Winchester area, has any consideration been given to approaching the consortium promoting the Royal Down development as to whether some of the available land could be given over to the council to build a new 21st century council estate?" Answering, Council Leader Lucille Thompson said Royal Down must be considered as part of the local plan process. "The issue has been poised to be a political football at the forthcoming local government elections on May the 6th. It will see elections for the County Council and also for the City Council, as well as the Police and Crime Commissioner."
Thank you, Daphne. That concludes the headline stories. We'll go on with the death notices now, and Daphne will follow with Christian comment. Here are the death notices. Brown, Nigel Syme of Hampshire, passed away on Thursday the 11th of February, aged 84. Guy, Pamela Phyllis, née Parnell, peacefully on the 15th of February 2021, aged 90. Martin, Susan, passed away at home on the farm on Friday the 22nd of February 2021, aged 72. Porter, Edna Joyce, passed away peacefully at home on the 21st of February 2021, aged 98 years. Veal, David, 66 years young, passed away peacefully on the 5th of February 2021, at Forest Holm Hospice, Poole. And Wiles, Gordon Marshall, died peacefully on the 15th of February 2021, aged 91 years. Nigel Hemming, senior pastor of the Winchester Vineyard Church, is a contributor of this week's Christian comment. It is headed, "A Time for Listening." Thank you, Daphne.
The vaccine programme is working beyond everyone's expectations. The weather is starting to show signs of spring, the children are going back to school, and the government has mapped out the road to freedom. The dates might not be set in stone, but there is a sense of hope and optimism as we start to plan our futures and think about what comes next. But lockdown has left a huge toll on the nation's well-being. Doctors expect a surge in children's mental health cases as the schools return. Reports of anxiety and depression are way above average in young adults, and also in households with job loss or lower incomes. Unsurprisingly, perhaps, high numbers of essential workers are reporting mental health symptoms, leading to increased substance use and suicidal thoughts for some during the pandemic. So when we are finally unlocked, will we actually be free? Even if we haven't suffered such extreme symptoms, many of us will need space to decompress and time to recover before we move on to any rebuilding or catching up. The professionals will be kept very busy, but here we can help one another to process our emotions in a safe and healthy way. Everyone has experienced losses during lockdown. Some have been lonely and isolated, while others simply haven't had any space to themselves at all, perhaps while also coping with grief and trauma. Most people's resilience has been severely tested in some way. The well-known passage in Ecclesiastes 3 encourages and reminds us that there is a time to weep and a time to laugh, a time to mourn and a time to dance. It also talks about a time to keep silence and a time to speak, Ecclesiastes 3, 4, 7b. Listening is one of the greatest gifts we can give someone at any time, and in the next season it will be a game changer. With just a few simple questions and some unhurried time, we can help to create safe spaces for family and friends, neighbours and colleagues to safely share their burdens, losses, grief and intensity from the pandemic. To me, this seems like the sort of thing Jesus would do. Some simple open questions are a good place to start. Here are some suggestions to ask yourself or others. What have you lost during the pandemic? What have you gained? What are you looking forward to doing that you haven't been able to do? What lockdown habits or patterns would you like to keep in the future? How have you encountered God during lockdown? And how have you changed? Ecclesiastes also reminds us that God has made everything beautiful in its time, Ecclesiastes 3:11, suggesting that it is possible to find some kind of beauty in even the darkest and most difficult seasons. Making time and space to reflect properly will not only help us learn the lessons of this season, but also to discharge the emotions in as healthy a way as we can, which can only set us up for a more positive future.
There's a large selection of letters on various subjects in the letters to the editor this week. I'll start us off with Hyde Street, the debate. Sir, I am disappointed to see that Hyde Street has been singled out as the source of all Winchester's traffic problems. It seems to me that the main problem for Roman roads, such as Hyde Street, Jury Street, North Walls and Chesil Street, is that the piecemeal development over the centuries has led to roadways of varying width alongside stretches of dangerously narrow pavement. In places, the pavements are barely wide enough for a pushchair or guide dog, let alone an accompanied adult. St. Bartholomew Ward is one of the most deprived wards in the city, largely due to the vulnerable groups who live along Hyde Street, and its residents ought to be able to walk as safe as anyone else to and from their houses. If the street was to be reopened, then the pavements must be widened and other safety measures put in place, such as a metal post, as in other ancient European cities, to make it safe for pedestrians. Our council has been awarded a grant and come up with a thoughtful scheme that will help make our city safer, healthier, cleaner, and a desirable destination for our struggling businesses. Let's not throw the baby out with the bathwater. And that's from Dr. Anne Russell of Hyde Street, Hyde.
Sir, we sympathise with our friend Bill Hode in wanting to lessen the traffic past his house in Worthy Lane. But we would ask for some reciprocal understanding of the fears of those of us in Hyde Street who fear a return to the past. A narrow thoroughfare, much narrower than Worthy Lane, in which our lives were blighted by constant traffic, from motorbikes to huge lorries attempting to cut short their journey. As is clear from Professor Nigel Wood's letter, Chronicle February 25, the residents of Hyde Street, including those in retirement flats and social housing, vastly outnumber those in the short row of houses along just one side of Worthy Lane. That is without counting Marston Gate, for whose residents Hyde Street is their sole road exit. It is surely unfair that their views should count for less. We gather that the petition from Bill and Steve Harborne was a 38 degrees online campaign, which anyone, anywhere can sign. More convincing would have been something put through our local letterboxes. The reality is that reopening Hyde Street would not help Worthy Lane. Nor, for that matter, would it ease congestion in North Walls if traffic were again to filter in from Hyde Street. Until its closure, Hyde Street was an anomaly in Hyde. Now it can join the rest of Hyde, Arthur Road, Nuns Road, Monk's Road, Egbert Road and so on, as an oasis of tranquillity. If there were an easy solution for the Worthy Lane residents, it would have been taken. Perhaps adjusting the traffic light nightmare of the Andover Road City Road crossroads would help. But the real need is to lessen our city's dependence on the car, made worse by housing developments. That will demand imagination and determination from our council. Lovely villages in France ban access to cars, sauf riverain, except for residents. Meanwhile, if cities such as Oxford, Cambridge, Bath and Bristol, or Seville, Frankfurt and Valletta can prioritise the pedestrian, why not Winchester? And that comes from John Andrews and Hilary Thomas, Hyde House Gardens, Hyde Street, Hyde.
Hyde Street. Sir, the answer to the question that Professor Wood posed in his letter to the Chronicle last week, where he found it difficult to see who would benefit from a return to the old system, is quite simple. The rest of Hyde and the whole city of Winchester. The city's traffic problems are a concern for all of us. Wider pavements and more cycle lanes are only part of the answer, and we all need to work together towards the city becoming greener. However, it is a fact of life that many people, such as those with limited mobility, key workers, community nurses, patient transport crews, family or paid carers, tradespeople, taxis and delivery drivers, do not have the option to use a bicycle or to be a pedestrian in their daily lives. The current Hampshire County Council plans are simply not imaginative enough to solve the problem. There needs to be a city-wide integrated scheme rather than piecemeal changes made seemingly on a whim. They do nothing to reduce congestion, merely diverting traffic onto longer routes with consequent increases in pollution. And that's from Justin Whiteley of Egbert Road, Hyde.
And now another letter on Hyde Street with a possible solution. Sir, the closure of Hyde Street to North Walls has had the very unfortunate effect of pitting one set of close neighbours, Worthy Lane, against another, Hyde Street. The heart of the problem is that for historical reasons, both roads serve a dual purpose as both arterial roads into the centre and as residential streets. The current experiment preserves Hyde Street as residential, but has doubled up the capacity of Worthy Lane in its arterial capacity. One can understand why the Worthies are upset. Is there a solution? Actually, I believe there is, if the council is prepared to pursue boldly and radically the logic of its ambitions. Very conveniently, there is the entrance to the Cattle Market car park at the north end of Worthy Lane. By taking a roadway across the car park so that it debouches as a T-junction into the Andover Road, roughly opposite the SO service station, it would enable both Hyde Street and Worthy Lane to enjoy their residential status, relieve them of their arterial function, and also give a controlled entrance into Andover Road. Very conveniently, there is already a traffic light just to the north of where this junction would be. This would not add to the volume of traffic in the Andover Road, merely move the access point 50 yards north, and create a proper control rather than the push and shove currently at the Worthy Lane junction. Not a perfect solution, maybe, but perfection is impossible given the lie of the land and the existing road system. And that comes from Edward Fennell, Egbert Road, Hyde.
And now, Richard Gibson of North Walls asks, what's local? Sir, the government recommend that when exercising, people should stay as local as possible. On Monday, I went for a cycle ride from Winchester, which took in villages which would fall outside the government definition of local. When I cycled there, the villages were deserted. There was hardly any traffic on the roads, and the risk of infection was minimal. When I returned to Winchester for a few more miles of cycling, there were people everywhere, walking in the road, on the pavements, and on shared paths. In addition, there was lots of traffic which I had to negotiate. Staying local when cycling is actually more risky than not staying local. Surely the government exercising advice should be stay away from people rather than stay local. I don't think coronavirus knows the difference between local and non-local. As I say, that's from Richard Gibson of North Walls, Winchester.
And now a letter from Ian Tate about a possible council estate at Royaldown. Sir, following up on my recent letter to the editor regarding affordable housing in Winchester at the full council meeting on February the 24th, I asked the council leader if there had been any dialogue with the consortium promoting Royaldown to see if a new council estate could be part of the development. Councillor Thompson said that there hadn't been, although she readily accepted that Winchester had a pressing need for more affordable housing, and mentioned that over the next 10 years, around 1,000 new affordable homes were planned to be delivered. What saddens me is that whilst politicians on all sides seem to wholeheartedly support the need for more affordable and inclusive housing, they seem reticent in saying exactly where these new homes could be built. I have to wonder if Winchester was today presented with the proposals to build the council estates of Stanmore, Winnall, Wick and Highcliffe, if residents would be forming campaign groups to oppose them. Winchester desperately needs strong political leadership, and while Councillor Thompson is correct to say that housing allocations need to follow the local plan process, what clearer signal could be given by the leader if she were to say that there will be a brand new council estate rather than shoehorning more homes in the existing council estates like the Valley and Stanmore and around the Winall flats? Winchester is a great place to live, but only if you are wealthy enough to be able to afford to get into the privileged Winchester Club, which regrettably isn't the case for many people who were born here. And that comes from Ian Tate, Berwick Road, Winchester.
And we'll follow that with a daft plan. Sir, it seems quite idiotic to propose a new town of 5,000 houses ruining the countryside between Oliver's Battery and Hursley when Carla Homes have not built anything like the 2,000 houses at Barton Farm. At the latest count, it stands at about 300. One could hazard a guess on why it's proceeding so slowly. No one has the money to pay £530,000 for a small terraced house of less than 1,500 square feet, sitting an inconvenient 2 miles out of town. Assuming a buyer can get a loan of about 3 times their salary, these prospective purchasers are going to need a combined income of in excess of £170,000 to buy one of these houses. Quite aside from blighting the countryside and swamping local services, until prices reconnect with earnings, it is ridiculous to plan another huge housing estate because there will not be the buyers to afford it. The UK housing market bubble will burst once the shrinking pool of buyers with large deposits dries up, and then one can imagine the greedy developers and landowners will find the idea of 5,000 houses much less appetising. When it does burst, the City Council needs to focus on building affordable, accessible homes that the people of Winchester need, including homes for the elderly to downsize into within their local area, instead of constantly infilling with large, expensive houses. And that's from Pip Billington of Kingsgate Road, Winchester.
And And now for a change of theme, there's a letter here about solar farms. Sir, there is a nice irony to your decision to print the report about the proposed Godsfield Solar Farm, Chronicle February 18, with the article about the disused Bushfield camp on the opposite page. Derelict sites such as this must surely present an opportunity for more solar energy without major damage to the environment. Few people today will dispute the need for more electricity generation, but for the so-called green group, Winchester Action on Climate Change, to support the Godsfield application beggars belief. Why is it apparently necessary to attempt to blot our wonderful countryside and valuable agricultural land with solar panels, when there are probably thousands of acres of warehouse and factory roofs in Hampshire alone, which have no panels on them? If agricultural land must be used, then sites adjacent to motorways, railways, etc., that is, areas which have already been spoiled by existing developments, should surely be preferred, as can be seen on the Alsford Bypass. And that's from John Cavendish, The Street, Farringdon, Alton.
And now I've got two short letters on the subject of removal of benches in the Close. Sir, how sad that the cathedral authorities have removed seats outside the cathedral, yet are now encouraging the return of more and more parked cars in exactly the same spot. One of the pleasant changes this last year has been the peaceful nature of the cathedral precincts without those parked cars. I took this picture today, on Monday, the March the 1st, and the picture is of the side of the cathedral with a little bit of the green, which looks very nice, and a white car, a blue car, and a red car parked there, and not a sign of a bench. And that was from Patrick Davis of Staple Gardens, Winchester. It's followed by, Sir, your piece last week regarding the removal of benches from the cathedral Close failed to highlight the inconvenience of the measure for older people in the city, of whom there are many, and the sheer stupidity of this ill-judged move. The Church of England has hardly covered itself in glory during the pandemic, closing its doors at a time of greatest need, and even now opening at best for just a few hours a day and doing everything to discourage an atmosphere of contemplation at a time people need it most. Yet the cathedral management's decision to remove benches to discourage people gathering has had the opposite effect. Older people have been obliged to squeeze onto the benches in front of the cathedral, even if others are sitting there, putting themselves at risk, whilst groups of young people continue anyway to gather where the old benches were, ignoring social distancing. Time, I think, to put the benches back and stop the silly gesture decisions. And that's from Justin Kay of Chapel Lane, Otterbourne.
And now a letter about the future use of Debenhams. Sir, in reference to the letter from Jill Collymore, Chronicle February 4, regarding the future use of the Debenhams building, I fully support her idea of having a concert hall in Winchester. A city the size of Winchester ought to have a concert hall that can provide a venue for both classical and popular live music performances. The building is ideally suited for a public performance venue, with ample car parking nearby, bus stations and taxi ranks at close hand, restaurants and pubs which can provide pre- or post-concert meals. Although this venture may not be deemed appropriate in the current economic climate, but looking forward to the future, it would be a great asset to Winchester. It will be able to attract audiences from different parts of the country. As a regular attendee at the Anvil in Basingstoke, I have noticed that it is always full to the rafters with audiences who come from far and wide. I am sure Winchester could do the same. What is more, taking into account the size of the building, it could also accommodate an art gallery alongside. And that comes from Fatima Mitchell, Crawley, Winchester.
And Paul Hickey of Parchment Street has another idea for Debenhams. Sir, Debenhams in Winchester should become a central community centre. Winchester people could play chess, play Scrabble, play board games, play backgammon, do art, study art history, do crafts, have created writing groups and a host of other leisure and recreational activities. Oh, and there would also be a nice cafe where people could buy hot drinks, cold drinks, non-alcoholic, and buy snacks. It would be a nice place to meet new people, make new friends and enjoy yourself. And that comes from Paul Hickey of Parchment Street, Winchester.
And now a rather sad little letter. Tree query. It's quite short. Sir, as if life was not difficult enough at the moment, I was devastated to see that the magnificent giant redwood tree in the churchyard of St. Michael's Church had been felled. I imagine it was diseased. Does anyone know when this tree and others in the area were planted and by whom? I should love to know. And that comes from Rosemary Poole, St. James Villas, Winchester.
And here's a historical thing. Dick's memories. Sir, Dick's, the company featured in The Family That Illuminated a City, Chronicle, February 25th, had close associations with the Winchester Dramatic Society. In the late Victorian and Edwardian years, Philip Dix, seen in the photograph with his son, was an actor in many of the plays presented at Winchester Guildhall. In 1903, he is credited as being in charge of lighting for Liberty Hall by R.C. Carton, with effects created by Messrs. Dix and Sons. The critic for the Hampshire Chronicle wrote that few, perhaps, if any of the previous performances have exceeded in merit and popularity, and that the takings were of a record character. Philip, along with dozens of other WDS members, appeared in the Winchester pageant of 1908 to raise funds for the underpinning of the cathedral. He played the officer to Bishop Gifford at the court of Henry I in a scene set at St Giles' Fair. Although Philip died in 1926, Dick and Sons continued to provide lighting for the society up to 1939. It is good to have another photograph of a member from these early years. The society is about to embark on fundraising for the annex to their home, the Chesil Theatre. By happy coincidence, in 1902, the WDS gave a concert in St Peter's schoolroom in aid of the alterations to the Church of St Peter's Chesil, designed by prominent citizen and keen actor, Alderman Thomas Stopher. And that's from Lisbeth Rake of Marston Gate, Hyde, Winchester.
And a letter about the origins of the Quakers in this area. Sir, thank you for your recent article, Clash of Beliefs, in the Chronicle, February the 18th. The Meon Valley was a strong area for these views, especially for Quakers. There is an interesting piece in Peter Watkins' book on Swanmore, from which I quote. Halfway up Hampton Hill, about 100 yards from the main road, in a quiet field on the left of the path leading to Jervis Court, is an intriguing reminder of Swanmore's 17th century past, the Quaker burial ground. The Society of Friends, often referred to as Quakers, was founded as a result of the teaching of George Fox, 1624-91, and its beginning is usually dated to 1652, although Fox had travelled the country almost from the beginning of the Civil War in 1642. Between the return of Charles II in 1660 and the Revolution of 1689, all forms of dissent from the established church were liable to persecution, and the Quakers were no exception. Quaker records show that meetings were held quarterly at Jervis Court Farm. The land, which is occupied by the burial ground, belonged in the middle of the 17th century to Richard Suett, a cordwainer, who lived in an adjoining cottage. In 1661, he buried his small son, Joseph, in the orchard. 2 years later, he sold the land, with right of access, for £1.08.00 to three trustees, Thomas Walter, a maltster, Thomas Penford, a blacksmith, both of Bishops Waltham, and Robert Reeves, yeoman of Swanmore. The three were Quakers and were persecuted for their faith. Walter was excommunicated, had his cattle seized for non-payment of tithes, and was imprisoned from 1667 to 73. Penford, who had a wife and three children, was also excommunicated for refusing to pay 3 pence towards the Mass House, presumably the parish church at Droxford. He was imprisoned in Winchester in 1664, died there in 1667, and was buried in the Quaker field at Swanmore. How the field came to be a burial ground is not clear. In 1908, Canon John Vaughan, rector of Droxford, speaking at the burial ground, told of how the owner had buried his son in the orchard among the apple trees and subsequently made over the field as a burial ground to the Society of Friends. Whatever the origin, 27 people died between 1661 and 1703, although only one in 1679. And that's from Crawford Wright, Chapel Road, Swanmore.
How interesting. Well, that's the end of the letters for this week. If you have an opinion or a subject you would like to air in the Hampshire Chronicle, you can contact them on 01962 860 836. That's 01962 860 836, or you can email news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, or you could write an old-fashioned letter to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. We'll continue now with Chronicle Comment, First Person and Belgarum. And here's the editorial comment. Shabby treatment of tree owners. What a strange story about public administration on page 3 of today's Chronicle. The City Council Planning Committee was being recommended to confirm a tree preservation order on 2 trees in a back garden in Compton Down, even though the reason for the TPO was shown to be false and malicious. Tree officers sprang into action after being told the trees were under threat. That was established to be a lie, yet the council persisted in trying to get the order confirmed, stating that the trees were still worthy of preservation. They unacceptably maintained that stance, even when it was pointed out that there are 200 similar trees in Compton without the protection of TPOs. Instead of backing down, the council pressed on and now looks foolish. In committee, Chairman Therese Evans treated a TPO as a minor thing, even though it places a burden of cost and bureaucracy on a tree owner. The owners, Una and Roger Stevens, have been treated very poorly. Fortunately enough, members of the committee had the common sense to reject the TPO. Now, Calla disease is getting a puppy. Daphne will tell us more.
Spring has sprung, finally. It's just amazing what a few days of relative warmth coupled with the welcome blue skies of a high-pressure system does to the soul. After all the continued gloom and freezing temperatures, suddenly life doesn't seem so bad. Mind you, it helps that there is genuine light at the end of the tunnel. Britain's vaccination rollout is the envy of the world. On Zoom calls with clients in Germany and the US, it's clear that when it comes to sticking needles in arms, we are well ahead of the pack. A good friend in the US said it is hard to find vaccine, and he's in the pharmaceutical business. It's patchy, though, as other American friends have already been jabbed. My German client tells me vaccination rates are still a tiny percentage of the adult population, whereas the UK, with well over 20 million first doses administered, has already covered around 30%. The high spot of our week has been the birth of a litter of working Cocker Spaniels, courtesy of a delightful bitch belonging to dear friends and neighbours. We lost our old dog in the autumn, and since then have been looking for a replacement. It's been tricky. With the lockdown, the world and his wife have been buying up puppies, creating two disastrous side effects. First, the price of dogs has shot up, with puppies changing hands for over £2,000. Secondly, it has led to a much more sinister development. Village social media pages are full of warnings about dog napping, stealing dogs to sell on. A recent post featured reports of unsavoury types in white vans, naturally, cruising around identifying likely victims. One miscreant was spotted tying a shoelace to a tree outside a house so he could identify Fido's home when he returned to carry out his dark deed. So far, the UK has been free of dog stick-ups, similar to that which befell Lady Gaga's dog Walker, held up at gunpoint and then shot anyway, as the felons lifted the singer's cherished French bulldogs. None of this desperate trade would happen if there wasn't a market for nicked dogs. In my youth, I well remember how puppies would change hands for a few notes in a pub. There were also the scandalous puppy farms, where bitches were turned into whelping machines, being put into pup virtually every six-monthly season. These farms, from memory, were predominantly in remote parts of Wales. Campaigning journalism, usually from some of the more salacious Sunday papers, served to educate the public and put paid to such foul enterprises. After stories on sex, you won't go too far wrong appealing to British sensitivities on animal welfare. It sold newspapers, but also did a great deal of good, a rare combination. But we're back here again because of people's selfishness. The message is simple. Don't buy a second-hand dog from a man in a pub. Don't buy puppies unless you can see them with the bitch and assure yourself of her welfare. Our new pup comes from the most brilliant of working dogs. Named Storm, she conceived around the time we were hit by Storm Darcy, so that had to be the name for our youngster. We can't wait for 8 weeks to pass so we can bring her home, a matter of just half a mile from where she was born. Excitement in the Aziz household is mounting. Dog beds are being prepared, newspapers are being hoarded to cope with the effluvium that inevitably accompanies young puppies. For several weeks, the Chronicle will be pressed into dual service. Humbling for we journalists to know that once read, our golden words will become briefly even more golden and then a soggy mess. Meanwhile, pictures are being flashed around on WhatsApp. Children and grandchildren are getting excited. And me and Mrs. A, well, what do you think?
Now, we have a historical item from Belgarum this week. Sepia photos that marked the beginning of the end of an era. What we have here is three photos of some chaps working, actually in 1985, but the pictures look a lot older. I'll describe them afterwards. The men's clothing, the ageing lorries, the pile of coal in the background. It looks like the photograph could have been taken 60 or 70 years ago. That it looks like a sepia photograph adds to the atmosphere of a bygone age. In fact, it was just a dull grey spring day as recently as April 1985 for the last day of operation for A.E. Early and Sons, the Winchester coal merchant who had supplied fuel to thousands of people for decades. Belgarum printed a photo of Early's headquarters on Chesil Street on February the 4th, asking for information about its history. It is set to be demolished for the expansion of the Chesil Theatre next door. We received several letters and calls, including from Martin Waldron of Main Road, Hursley, who took the photos. The main photo shows Gordon Major, who worked for Mr. Waldron with Ron and John Early. Mr. Major is still alive and living in Stanmore. Mr. Waldron was invited to take over the Early business, but fewer homes were using the fuel as electric and gas provided more and more heating, and Mr. Waldron closed his business down a couple of years later. We thank him for sending in the photos. And now, we've got a rather nice flatbed truck picture with Gordon Major standing proudly by it, and that was taken in 1985. And yes, it does look rather sepia. There's another very splendid picture of three gentlemen on Early's last day of operation in April 1985. And although they're wearing their working clothes of overalls and flat caps, they are at least wearing ties. Very smart. Now, sadly, no historical items or what's on this week. Well, I suppose nothing is happening. So here are the lighting up times. On Saturday, the 6th of March, the sun will set at 5:54 p.m. And on Wednesday, the 3rd of February, the sun will rise at 6:31 a.m. and will set at 6:01 p.m. The weather observation at Otterbourne for the week ending Monday the 1st of March, showed the rainfall for the week was 0.3 millimetres, bringing the total rainfall for the year to date to 152 millimetres. And now on to items of general news. Daphne, would you like to kick us off, please?
Yes, and the first item is headlined Free Parking for Care Workers. Care workers in Winchester City Centre will be able to get free parking as the City Council clarifies its stance. The issue was raised at full council when member of the public Rebecca Butler called on the City Council to give free parking to social care workers as it does to NHS staff. Ms. Butler said, "The nature of domiciliary care work is solitary and time-pressured, nearly always women, on 0 hours or agency contracts, many from immigrant and black, Asian and mixed ethnicity communities. Their work is emotionally draining, physically demanding and low-paid. They are typically allocated a 30-minute slot per patient and not paid for their travelling time between patients. They must fund their own costs of fuel, car usage and parking, all of which erodes their hourly rates to below the minimum wage." She said care workers had been getting parking tickets from council traffic wardens. Councillor Martin Todd said there had been an informal arrangement for such workers to get free parking since the start of the pandemic. Councillors backed a notice of motion from Conservative Councillor Stephen Godfrey for such workers to park for free either on or off street. The motion stated that this council recognises the exceptional service given by care workers who have continued throughout the pandemic to deliver essential care services in the home for the most vulnerable residents in our district, by the council arranging for them to be able to park for free, either in on or off-street parking spaces controlled by the council while they are working to provide care at home. They spent some time arguing over a successful Lib Dem amendment to add the word continuing to get free parking. Tory group leader Caroline Horrell said adding continuing was a weasel word. Clearly, whatever has been happening, it is not clear to the public, the care workers and the people they care for. Councillor Martin Todd, Lib Dem Cabinet Member for Service Quality, said, "We are absolutely committed to support for carers And our focus is not just on car parks, but also in controlled parking zones in the residential areas where carers do most of their work. Currently, as you highlight, we allow anyone who is linked to the NHS or critical care providers to have free parking. We keep vehicle records for multiple care providers, allowing them to park for free near to where they need to provide care. Lib Dem councillor Kelsey Lurney said she did not want to see the free parking abused. She said it would have been helpful if the Conservatives had done their homework on this and asked what was possible and what was being done. We all agree care workers deserve this and we should just be getting on with it.
E-scooter trial is punctured. Plans for an e-scooter trial in Winchester have been scrapped, but residents could have access to electric bikes instead. County bosses have confirmed that an e-scooter trial, expected to be rolled out in Winchester this spring, will no longer go ahead. But they are said to be looking into an e-bike hire-only scheme. It comes as last year the Department for Transport approved plans for a 12-month e-scooter trial in Winchester, Southampton and Portsmouth. But Hampshire County Council has confirmed that the trial in Winchester has been dropped. Councillor Rob Humby, Deputy Leader and Executive Member for Economy, Transport and Environment, said the timeline set by the Department for Transport to be part of the e-scooter pilot for Winchester were too tight for the proposed scheme to be properly implemented. Furthermore, the impact of the third COVID-19 lockdown has also meant that the need for the scheme to happen right now has changed, and it is not the best time to run a pilot whilst travel is so disrupted. We are investigating the business case for an e-bike hire-only scheme. We will be assessing the cost and long-term viability through market testing and further engagement. But Councillor Martin Todd, Cabinet Member for Service Quality and Transformation at the City Council, said, "We need to be encouraging sustainable transport and to make it easier for people to use low-carbon ways to go around town. But they need to be right for the city. And as it stands, e-bikes are right for the city."
Council's new garden waste scheme criticised. Excuse me. Winchester householders are having their green waste left uncollected under a new scheme. The City Council has launched a controversial garden waste collection service, with residents having to pay £39 for a new brown bin, and even more if it's a larger bin. A meeting heard that people have paid for a service which they are not getting. At full council, Councillor Stephen Godfrey, Conservative, raised the issue. The launch of the paid-for garden waste collection service, excuse me, has seen instances of householders who have paid for new brown bins that have not been delivered. Despite paying the subscription, these householders did not have their garden waste collected when presented in the old garden waste bags. Can the member tell me how long it has been taking for new subscribers to the paid-for garden waste collection service to receive their new bin after ordering, and when will they start to receive the service that they have paid for? Councillor Martin Todd, Cabinet Member for Service Quality and Transformation, replied, "The new charged-for garden waste service started on February the 1st as part of the new 8-year contract with BIFA. In preparation, BIFA began delivering the garden waste bins at the start of December, well before the new service began. As a result, 7,500 residents had already received their bin before it began. Sales and deliveries have continued at pace, and as of February the 22nd, we have sold approximately 14,050 bins, and BIFA had delivered over 11,780 to residents who have signed up to the new scheme. To minimise the impact on the environment and to enable a quicker overall distribution of new bins, we have arranged for BIFA to deliver them in groups by area, coordinated with planned pickup days. For example, the waste crews will deliver to Coldon Common and Twyford one day, and Sutton Scotney and South Wanston the next. And this approach, combined with agreeing with Biffa to fund extra teams and extending hours for bin delivery, means we are currently delivering just over 1,750 bins per week. As highlighted in the agreement, when people sign up, there is unavoidably a lag between purchasing and delivering.
A day dedicated to using the internet safely. Pupils at Stanmore Primary celebrated Safer Internet Day. Both in-school and online pupils at the school were encouraged to think about reliability online through a range of engaging tasks. The children learnt that the internet can be a really good place with lots of people running their jobs online, learning and raising money for charity. Teacher Angela Hawkins said, "Joe Wicks is a great example. All of his PE with Joe videos made money for the NHS because of the adverts linked to them." However, the campaign also looked at how we can trust the internet, how we can trust the material we access online, and supported pupils to question and challenge the online world. Safer Internet Day is the project of UK Safer Internet Centre. It is a partnership of three leading organisations, ChildNet International, Internet Watch Foundation and SWGFL, with one mission: to promote the safe and responsible use of technology for young people. It began in 2011 and will return next year. And there's a nice picture of a couple of Stanmore pupils holding up magnifying glasses for some reason.
And now some pictures to tell you about from Hampshire Chronicle Camera Club. It says, "Sun shows county in different light. It's amazing how a little bit of sunny weather can make Hampshire look completely different. This is the first time this year we have seen spectacular blue skies and glorious sunshine. But it has not just brought all us humans out to play. Just look at some of these swan photos. Photos posted here may be used in the Hampshire Chronicle and its respective publications, websites and social media channels. By posting pictures in the group, you give consent for publication. Portraits, landscapes, wildlife shots, human interest images and news pictures, we welcome it all. This is not a competitive page, it is simply for fun, and not all photos make it into the paper. So I'll describe some of them to you. The first one is underneath "A Huge Spider or Not" by Janet Kirby, and it's a piece of water, a part of the river, I think, with trees around it, and in the middle there is a clump of green sort of weeds and roots, and it really does look rather like a great big tarantula, only it's green and brown. So I can see why it's called spider. Now next to this, Tina Georgiadis captured this swan dancing, and it's a swan on tiptoe with wings flapping, lots and lots of spray. It really does look as if it is dancing. Then we've got "The Itchin' Looking Blue" by Wesley Miles, a very tranquil picture. A wide stretch of the Itchin that I think has flooded over to the over the banks, beautiful blue sky and some leafless trees. Very artistic picture. Then we have another one by Rachel Parker. This was at Cowdown, of a tree in flooded water with its reflection. A mute swan on the river, just its head, pecking away looking for something on the bank. Helen Carter's photo of the Itchin near St Catherine's Hill with another swan. It's all swans this week. In fact, it's two of them cruising very sedately down a stretch of the Itchin with the rising sun in the background. It's a frosty morning and frosty trees all around. And finally, one called "Bottoms Up" with two ducks half buried in the water. And that comes from Brett Woods.
Uptails all.
Uptails all, yes.
And now we have the launch of Heroes Awards. So, who are your heroes? The search for local superstars begins today with the official launch of the Hampshire Hero Awards. The Hampshire Chronicle, along with its sister NewsQuest titles in the region, are looking for those people in the county who deserve our thanks and recognition for all that they have done during the COVID-19 pandemic. There are a host of backers of the awards, including principal sponsor Utilita, who said they look forward to shining a light on your inspirational stories. The awards are divided into three categories: medical heroes, emergency heroes, and everyday heroes. Bill Brown, on behalf of the organisers, said, "We know there are many people who have done extraordinary things to help others in these troubled times, and we are looking to our readers to tell us all about them." CEO of Utilita Energy, Bill Bullen, said, "It's a privilege and honour to have the opportunity to celebrate the exceptional achievements of ordinary people throughout the county during what has been a challenging year." The awards will be hosted online in the summer by Falklands veteran and hero Simon Weston, CBE, and there will be celebrity guests to introduce each category, including Strictly Come Dancing judge Craig Revel Horwood.
Station building to be used as local hub. The building at Shawford Railway Station is set to be transformed into a new community hub. It includes 5 rooms, a kitchen and a toilet, and has been leased by South Western Railway, SWR, to the Three Rivers Community Rail Partnership for a nominal rent. SWR has a policy of making redundant spaces available for local people to use. While no decision has yet been made on what the space will be used for, options on the table include a community cafe, a cycle hub, and a base for a local cub troop. The Shawford Station building is the 3rd redundant space in Hampshire made available by SWR for community use, following an internal review of all buildings across its network. At Swathling Station, an SWR building has been turned into a free shop, collecting food which would otherwise be thrown away and redistributing it to people who can make use of it. At Netley Station, an additional toilet has been made available to a local community group, while plans are being drawn up to reopen an old waiting room there. SWR is hoping to hand the keys to more redundant spaces over to other community groups soon. Mark Miller of the Three Rivers Community Rail Partnership said, "Having picked up the keys this week, we are excited about this project at Shawford. There is so much potential in the building and we cannot wait to progress." And there's a photo of the old ticket office, it must have been, closed down now, looking a bit sad and not nearly as busy as it would have been.
Fundraising for statue is nearing target. An appeal to raise funds for a public statue of a medieval Jewish woman in Winchester is nearing its target. Fundraisers have gathered more than £110,000 towards its target of around £150,000 in the last 2 years since its launch in 2018. The statue will portray Licorisia with her son Asher. She was prominent in business in the 13th century and was murdered in the city in 1277. The Licorisia project aims to unveil the statue on outside the Discovery Centre on Jury Street, close to the medieval Jewish quarter, in the second half of 2021. It is being created in full-size form by renowned sculptor Ian Rank Broadley and will be cast in bronze in the spring. The charity is working on the educational aspect. A book has been commissioned by author Rebecca Abrams, and education experts at Hampshire County Council have been preparing lessons for school children. The publications will not only provide information about Winchester's important medieval Jewish community, but would also be a gateway to learning about a time in Winchester's history when, with its royal and ecclesiastical connections, it was one of the most important cities in the country. Maggie Carver, the chairman, said, "We are very excited by the progress that we have made and the support that we have received for this unique venture that will beautify the city and be a gateway to a new world of discovery about Winchester's past." Close to Henry III, Licorisia helped finance Westminster Abbey and carved out a successful career in the 13th century against considerable odds. This was very unusual for women at the time, and she managed it whilst bringing up a family and in the face of increasing persecution. The charity says her story teaches important lessons about tolerance, the importance of diversity, education, gender equality and prejudice. And the article is accompanied by a picture of the Discovery Centre and the terrace just outside the bit where the cafe is, where the statue's going to go, and a model of the statue which shows Licorisia, a medieval lady in a long gown and cape and wimple, striding forth rather forcefully and purposefully, it looks like, and holding her hand is her son Asher, a small boy who's obviously been distracted by something and is looking off in the other direction. Okay.
A mad monster of a house allowed to grow. A house described as gone mad and a monster can be extended. City councillors on the planning committee disliked the scheme, but said there were no planning grounds to reject it. Dean Churcher applied to put a 3.5-metre first-floor extension on Long Ash on Pitcote Lane, Oslebury. Members of the planning committee expressed concern about the way the house was growing. Councillor Mike Reed said, "This is a property that seems to have just gone mad." Councillor Russell Gordon-Smith said, "It's a bit of a monster, isn't it? But I don't know on what grounds you can refuse it. The overlooking is not going to be any worse than at the moment." Councillor Brian Laming said there had been non-compliance with planning requirements. "Are we entitled to grant this now? It seems to me we are just letting them and rolling over." The legal advice to the planning committee was that any enforcement issues could not influence a decision on the current application. Next door neighbour John Foster objected. "Since 2014, we have lived with significant development, with 8 applications and 1 appeal. There is building more or less every year. When will this level of development end?" He was supported by Paul Bowes of Oslebury Parish Council, who said the house was now too big and overbearing. Mr. Bowes said creating such large houses in the village would push up property values and price out young families, threatening the future of the successful village school. The house replaced a small bungalow of 130 square metres and is now 443 square metres. Neither Mr. Churcher nor any agent were at the committee to speak about the development. Committee Chairman Therese Evans said, "I regret the way we have allowed this extension to happen. I feel very sorry for the neighbours who originally lived next door to a very small bungalow and now live next door to a very large house with a balcony with constant building going on. I would like to refuse this, but don't think there is any valid planning reason to do so. It has been allowed by incremental creep to become a very large house." The committee voted to approve by 5-2 with 1 abstention.
Trial delayed again after COVID scare. The trial concerning the murder of a drug supplier in a Meon Valley lay-by has been halted for the fourth time after a defendant tested positive for COVID-19. Murder accused Aston Hannis had been giving evidence in the trial at Winchester Crown Court in connection with the death of Gurinderjit Rai. But on Wednesday last week, the court was told that the 29-year-old has contracted the virus. Mrs. Justice Cutts told the jury on Thursday, "On Wednesday, Mr. Hannis, currently in the witness box, and gave evidence to us on Friday. Then on Monday and Tuesday, we were informed has developed COVID-19. That clearly means he cannot be here. We cannot carry on really without him because he is clearly giving his evidence. I am afraid we are not going to be able to sit on the trial next week and we will resume Monday the 8th of March. The judge highlighted that it was absolutely not Mr. Hannis's fault that the trial has now been delayed. She continued, "We have to recognise that this may have an impact on the length of the trial. It is possible, although not inevitable, that we will go beyond the 1st of April. The jury were told that they may have to sit until April the 16th, 2 weeks longer than the initial date. The case was halted last month after a dock officer tested positive for coronavirus and two defendants, Paul White and Corin Barlow, were forced to self-isolate and have been hearing the case via video link. Previously, a jury member told the court that she had to self-isolate after coming into close contact with someone who had contracted the virus and at the start of the trial after White tested positive for COVID-19. The body of Gurinderjit Rai was found in a Ford Fiesta in the countryside lane in Corhampton near Bishop's Waltham by two horse riders on July the 13th, 2019. Barlow from Horsley, Surrey, White, 27, of Dyson Drive, Abbots Barton, Hannis, 29, of Lear Gardens, Eastleigh, Charlie Statham, 30, of Crescent Close, Oliver's Battery, all deny murder. Philip Hoden, 43, of Longwood, Dean Lane, Oslebury, denies participating in the criminal activities of an organised crime group. The trial is expected to resume on Monday.
Villagers press for crossing sparked by roadworks. Gas maintenance works have acted as a catalyst for villagers in Twyford to campaign for a safe crossing. Long blighted by excess traffic and lorry movements, Twyford can be a dangerous place for pedestrians. Elderly people and families with small children have to cross the B3335 near the Phoenix Inn to get to the primary school or to Hunter Park. As the sight lines are so poor, a brow on one side and a sharp bend on the other, pedestrians take their lives in their hands. When the gas main works began at this spot in early February, residents noted a big improvement in safety because temporary traffic lights had been set up. Discussion started on the Twyford residents' Facebook page. Sarah Evans pointed out, "When we've asked for a pedestrian crossing there for school, there's always been the line of sight argument. Well, the cars and lorries are stopping perfectly easily for these lights, so why not for lights for children to get to school safely, for people to be able to access both sides of the road to get to allotments and the park?" Roger Walker, whose office is next to the existing non-controlled crossing point, said, "Traffic has increased significantly and the HCC Highways Department might be more agreeable to the idea. I feel sure that the parish council would support a project to try to get a formal crossing at the top of Queen Street." The subject was brought up at Twyford Parish Council on February the 18th, and both local city councillors Tony Bronk and Sue Cook have sprung into action. Councillor Bronk said, "The volume and speed of traffic passing through Twyford necessitates the presence of regular safe crossing points. Unlike many busy roads, it is too narrow to utilise islands. The crossing point by the Queen Street Junction gives pedestrians a false sense of security because of its ramps and bollards, but its approach is unsigned and it is simply fortuitous that no one has been injured there. Councillor Cook has spoken to County Councillor Rob Humby and they have agreed to meet to discuss matters.
Sainsbury's staff in charity effort. Sainsbury's in Badger Farm and Argos have joined forces for charity. The two companies will be sending gift cards to many organisations, including Trinity Winchester, the Carroll Centre, Dementia NHS, Shepherdsdown School, St Cross and St Faith's Church, and Badger Farm Playgroup. Their aim is to spread joy across the community and will also deliver refreshments and snacks to the medics and volunteers at Winchester's Vaccination Centre. Charity Coordinator for Sainsbury's, Jane Stevens, said, "We will also be delivering goodies to the forgotten heroes working, keeping things going, including those staff and volunteers at Marwell Zoo. We will be dropping off many goodie hampers to school staff rooms. We know what it is like working in a pandemic. We can appreciate their hard work and hopefully give them a little bit of joy." And there's a photo of three ladies all masked up with boxes and trays of goodies ready to hand on to the night shelter on Jury Street.
Fish restaurant plans in progress. Winchester Guildhall will soon house a fish and chip restaurant and takeaway as plans have been approved to transform a former council-run cafe. As previously reported, Lenny Carr Roberts, who owns the Fox in Crawley and the Bugle in Twyford, applied for a premise licence for 1871 in the Guildhall alongside his business partner Kevin Watson. Now Winchester City Council have given the green light for alterations to be carried out to redevelop the unit into restaurant and takeaway business Shoal. A small number of internal alterations will be made to the unit to allow the restaurant to function as a standalone business separate from the Guildhall. These include infilling archways, forming two new openings in walls, a new partition wall, and the creation of toilets. The application was approved last month by planning officers, but not everyone was happy with the design. The City of Winchester Trust objected to the plans and said the Guildhall is a foremost civic building of significant architectural merit, and the Trust believes that having a fish and chip takeaway on its front elevation would be a slight to its dignity and a degradation of its character in this prime position on the Broadway. The Trust feels that it would have been more acceptable to have the restaurant entrance on the Broadway frontage and the takeaway entrance on the east frontage, and we therefore urge that the current internal configuration be revised. This was not taken up by planning chiefs. Speaking previously, Mr. Carr Roberts told the Chronicle, "The venue will become a traditional, smart, family fish and chip restaurant that will also have a takeaway area using sustainable, local-caught Solent fish. I aspire for it to become the best value and rated restaurant in Winchester, along with my other two restaurants, the Bugle Inn and the Fox." The premise licence application previously said that the restaurant could open between 9 a.m. and midnight, Monday to Sunday.
And finally, rare birth at Marwell. One of the smallest hoofed animals in the world, a rare mouse deer, has been born at Marwell Zoo. Staff at the zoo have welcomed the tiny youngster that was born to Gus and Gwen at the zoo's Energy for Life Tropical House. The Javan chevrotan, also known as a mouse deer, weighed approximately 370 grams at birth, and keepers say that the new arrival is doing well, although their interactions are minimal due to the sensitivity of the species. Tim Rowlands, Marwell Zoo's hoofstock team leader, said, "We separated the male and female 2 weeks before she gave birth, so she would not be disturbed, even by him, mimicking the natural behaviour of the female, taking herself away to find a quiet and secure spot to give birth in the wild. All deer species will hide their young until they're older, so they will only really come out to feed them, then hide again. There are very few zoos who care for any of the mouse deer species, as they are so small in size, very secretive and nocturnal. So any youngster born is great news for the conservation breeding programme. And the picture of the Javan Chevrotain born at Marwell is adorable. It's a small, furry creature with a head that seems as big as its body. The eyes seem to take up most of the head, and it's looking straight at the camera with its little ears folded back. Adorable. Well, I'm sorry to say that's all we have for you this week. Thanks to all the support teams for the preparation and dispatch of this edition, to our editors, Sheila Shepherd and Sonia Phillips, and of course, many thanks to our reader, Daphne Poupart.
Goodbye.
From me, Barbara Kearns, thank you for listening, and until the next time, goodbye and stay safe. When you've finished with this week's recording, please put the memory stick back in the wallet, place the correct address label on the front of the wallet, and return it as soon as possible. Thank you for listening, and goodbye again.